This is my fairy tale, which I'm going to share with you. I first heard about Baba in 1956. I had just started working for a newspaper in Westchester County, north of Manhattan. And it was at the time when Baba was making his 1956 visit to the United States.
You might not have to.
There came to work at the newspaper on a part-time basis a woman named Jenny Glure. She's Dee Dee Conklin's mother. It's a grandmother. She did her work at home, and it was my job to stop by her house once a week and pick up that work. 2 weeks, maybe even only a week before she came to work for this paper, Jenny had met Baba in New York with her sister, Liz Sakalis, and the Kashoutis, Henry and Keisha. They were all friends, childhood friends. When I went to see Jenny once a week, she started talking about this man she had met. She beat around the bush as far as she could in describing what he was, knowing that I had been brought up a Catholic, and not knowing what kind of reception she'd get if she came out and told me who he really was. And in those days, you were inclined to be more careful because few people had a background in Eastern religion, and you could get pretty violent reactions, you know, particularly from your own family, as they had, both of them. I listened in my young arrogance because I thought Jenny wanted to talk about it. And then Liz started showing up at these coffee clutches. She came all the way up from New York. And we'd sit around and I'd listen. And finally one day, Liz got very tired of this horsing around. And she came out and she said, "Well, he's the Christ." And she got up, she walked out of the room. It was like, take it or leave it. You know, I'm tired of fooling with you. And it was like everything inside me just turned over and went, whoop. And I accepted it immediately. It had to be right. He couldn't be anybody else. That thought was so overwhelming to me that the Christ could be alive in the world then, that it was enough for me. And I didn't at that point have any desire to run out and meet Baba. I was content with that knowledge. Well, 2 years later, Baba was due to come back to the United States and come here to Myrtle Beach, give sahavas. Jenny and Liz asked if I would like to come down with them and meet Baba. Well, Baba had said only those who loved him and were willing to obey him should come. And I'm a very literal person, so it set off in my mind this whole thing about I didn't know what love was, let alone whether I loved Baba. And I thought since he had said that, unless I could say I loved him, I shouldn't come. So I didn't, because I had already heard, you know, and knew that obedience was higher than love. Well, Jenny and Liz came, and that was in May of 58. The last night that Baba was here in Myrtle Beach, and I was home in bed, sound asleep, sometime like 4 o'clock in the morning, I suddenly woke up scared to death, popped right out of sleep, sat straight up in bed, and saw Baba standing at the foot of my bed. And I'm a person who does not remember dreams. I've never had any kind of experience like that, so it literally almost frightened me to death. Baba was looking very young. He's wearing his blue coat. He's standing at the foot of the bed, and he had one hand on his hip, those pictures you see of him, and the other hand on the bedpost. And he's looking he's looking at me and smiling, and the thought I had with it, that was that he was saying, "Well, are you coming or aren't you?" I jumped out of bed. I could hear my heart just pounding, and I heard my heels hit the floor and knew I was awake. And the instant I knew I was awake and he was still there, then he was gone. So I was so exhausted by the experience, I climbed back into bed and went right back to sleep. Nothing keeps me from my sleep. And a couple of days later, when Ginny and Liz came back from Myrtle Beach, I told them about that experience. And Liz, being in a complete fog from having spent a week with Baba, was perfectly willing to turn right around, drive back to Myrtle Beach, and bring me with her. So she called up Elizabeth and Kitty and said, "Is it all right if I bring this person?" Well, at that time, Elizabeth had asked Baba who could come to the center. Because previous to that, it was more or less people came when he was here. So Baba told Elizabeth, "Those who love and follow me, those who know of me and want to know more." And since at that time, Kitty and Elizabeth were still living at Yupan Dunes downtown, the house Dilruba was not here yet, Baba said that if a newcomer came, someone who had not met him, was staying on the center, then either Kitty or Elizabeth had to stay on the center at night when that person was here. So I came back down with Liz, and it was Kitty who came out to the center every night while I was here and stayed in the lake cabin. And Liz and I were in the cabin on the hill. We had Kitty all to ourselves for a week every night. One day, I was sitting in the lagoon cabin.
Excuse me, Baba had already gone.
He'd gone, okay. Long gone, back in seclusion, you know, back to India. I was sitting in the lagoon cabin on the floor in front of Baba's chair, not really thinking about anything, and suddenly felt a wave of love come from Baba to me, go through me, turn around, and go back to Baba and close up in a circle so that then there was no question of who loved and who was loved. It was just this circle. And I realized that for the first time, I could say I love Baba, but only because he had first given me the gift of his love, and it was that love that I returned to him, that it was nothing out of me. And of course, with my fantastic timing, at that point, I wanted very much to see Baba. And of course, he was gone. He was back in India. He was in seclusion. We couldn't even write. But I did have some friends at court, and Kitty kept writing. She had permission to write. She could write to Marin Mani. Beryl Williams had permission to write, and they all kept putting in their letters how much Ann Conlon wants to see Baba. And every once in a while, one of them would get a letter back from Marin Mani saying, "Baba realizes how much Ann wants to meet him, and he sends his love to her." And that would keep me going, you know, for a little while. But it got so bad as the years went by that I began to hate everybody who had met Baba. They'd be sitting around in New York talking about having been with him, and I would get so mad I'd get up and walk out of the room. You know, and I really felt cheated. And I remember one night they were showing slides of the 58 Sahabas at Fred Nella's house in New York, and John Bass came up to me afterwards and he said, "I didn't see you in any of those pictures. I almost punched him in the nose." He'd forgotten I wasn't there. You know, that was wild. Well, this went on until the spring of 61. And Liz and I had been going to the Monday night meetings in New York. We went to this one. And Fred came in with that lovely poker face. Didn't say anything to anybody until he stood up a few minutes later and said he had a family letter from Monty. And he was going to read it. So I started reading, and it was describing the summer at Marizad, and they were planning to move to Guru Prasad in Pune for the hottest part of the summer. And then it said, "Baba has decided, because of the longing of his lovers, that he will open the door a crack in his seclusion, and his lovers may come for 1 hour on any one day over a two-week period, stay for the 1 hour and go home." Now, the period of time covered May 15th to May 31st, We got that letter when the first week was gone. There was a week left. My first reaction to that was just absolute panic, because I felt very strongly this was my opportunity, and if I didn't attempt to get there, I was never going to see him. I also didn't have any money. I was not entitled any time off at my job. My editor had fired a girl the week before for going off to Florida on 24 hours notice. So what it was coming down to, there was no money, and if I did go, I'd probably have to quit my job. But I was frantic. Well, Liz Sakalis was sitting next to me, and she said that she had no feeling about going. It's very unusual for her. She would have run over anybody to get to Baba. And as Dee Dee knows, had had to run over her own parents to get there. But she said she felt that if she turned and looked at me and I looked like I wanted to go, she was going to give me the money. So she said she turned and she looked, and it was obvious. And everybody else is just standing around at the Monday night meeting saying, oh, well, this isn't for us. It's just for the Easterners. Well, we left the meeting. We went over to Beryl Williams' house, and everybody is talking about how lovely an opportunity is for the Easterners. And Bob had said in the letter, people who can't come a great distance or at great expense, he wouldn't want them to for so short a time, because he might give a better opportunity later in his own way. And I didn't believe a word of it. He'd been saying that for years. Right. So Liz went to the telephone. She called Jenny, called her sister, and asked her what she thought about the idea of giving me the money. Apparently, they had enough in their joint bank account for one person to go. And Jenny said that she felt that neither one of them could go off and leave me behind after all those years of telling me about Baba. So she told Liz, she said, go ahead. So Liz came back and offered it to me very quietly. Nobody else in the room heard this. And she said they wanted to give me the money. It was not a loan. They didn't want it back. I would take the money and go to Baba. And I accepted it because it was so obviously given out of their love and concern for me. No strings. I accepted it. And the next morning, which was Tuesday, I called Air India and asked them for the first flight out of New York to Bombay. And it wasn't going until Thursday night. So I figured, well, I could leave Thursday night. I would be in Bombay Saturday morning. I could get to Pune Saturday afternoon, see Baba in that hour, 4:30 to 5:30, get back to Bombay, get the 1 a.m. flight back to New York, be home on Sunday and back at work on Monday. And I'd only have to take one day off. But I had forgotten little things like a passport and a visa. And I didn't have one. I had never been out of the United States. But I figured the first thing to do was go in and tell them that I was leaving. So I walked up to my editor, this 6'5", hot-tempered Italian, and said, Vic, I have the chance to go to India for the weekend. He stood up, he looked at me, and he said, of course, you have to go. He said, of course, you have to go. He never asked why, and to this day, he doesn't know why.
Why do you know?
The assumption over the next few days was that I was eloping with a Maharaja. So, when Mindy said that, I realized that something was happening here. And I said, well, you know, I don't have a passport or a visa. And he said, you take all the time you want. We'll cover your work for you. Why are you only going for the weekend? You know, why don't you stay longer? And I said, well, if it turns out longer, I'll cable you. He said, fine, you just let us know. So I went running off to the county clerk's office to apply for a passport. I didn't have any pictures with me. It was close to closing. The man said, I'll wait for you. Go across the street and get your pictures. So I got those. I came back. No, in White Plains, up in Westchester. And then I asked him, I said, how long is this going to take? And he said, oh, 3 weeks. I said, but I'm leaving Thursday night for India. He said, oh. So he put all the papers in an envelope, and he wrote a woman's name on it, and he said, you go into Manhattan tomorrow, the Passport Bureau in Rockefeller Center, find this woman, tell her I sent you, and maybe she can help you. And let me know how you make out. So the next morning, Ginny took me by the hand with her Saks credit card and her checkbook, and we went off to New York. Now, the middle of May, toward the end of May, is a peak beginning of the travel season out of this country. And I walked into that passport office. It was jammed. We found the woman we were looking for, and there was nobody in line in front of her. She was sitting there having coffee, talking to somebody else. So I walked up to her, and I gave her the papers. And she looked at it, and she said, well, you come back in 2 hours. I'll have it for you. And I said, well, what time does the Indian consulate close? Because I still have to get a visa, and I'm going tomorrow night. And she said, well, then you come back in an hour, because they close at 1 o'clock. So at that point, since it looked like I was going to get the papers, we went tearing off over to Air India's office. They had gotten so confused about this booking. They had booked me out on May 25th. 1961, back on May 28th, 1962. Because nobody went to India for the weekend. And I was going to be in India exactly 20 hours before I came back. So they thought, that's impossible, it's not right. So anyway, we got that straightened out. And the ticket agent said to me, lady, I went to London for tea once, but you make me look like a piker. So I asked him where I could send a cable, because that little sentence that Baba said in the family letter about he would not wish people to come a greater distance or great expense for so short a time, we weren't sure whether that was an order or it was out of Baba's compassion for people who couldn't come. I can look at it now, and it looks like an order to me. But at the time, it didn't. It was ambiguous. So I thought I would send a cable to Baba, and it would give him time to stop me if it wasn't right for me to come. So I went over to the cable office, and I thought, I will also try to cover myself on this. So what I said in the cable was, no distance too great, no expense too high. I was arriving. I gave him the time I was arriving in Bombay, and that I would arrange my own transportation to Pune. And it wasn't any distance by jet, and it wasn't expensive because it wasn't my money. I didn't spend a dime. While we were there, the man from Air India's office came running over to the cable office, and he said it had occurred to him that I was going to India alone. I had never been there, and if I would come back to his office, he would make some arrangements. So when we went back there, he had already telexed the Air India office in Bombay, and I would be met by Air India, and they would see that I got to Pune, which hadn't even occurred to me. I figured if I got to Bombay, then I could find Pune from there, you know, and I hadn't given it any thought. I had the address of Guru Prasad. I figured that was all I needed. I knew by that point that Fred Winnefelt was going to go, but he couldn't make it out as fast as I could because he was a naturalized citizen and there was some little formality with his passport. He couldn't leave till the night after. And he had said to me, it's too bad we can't go together. And I said, Fred, this one's mine and I'm not waiting for anybody. You know, I'll see you there. Well, we got the ticket. We got the passport. Went over to the Indian consulate and I thought, this may be where I'm going to have trouble because that was the beginning of an influx of young Americans into India. The Indian government was getting very touchy about it because they were running out of money, overstaying visas. So they wanted to know why you were going. In the meantime, Baba didn't want anybody to know why we were going. He didn't want any publicity. So when I went to the Indian consulate, found this lovely young woman, made out the papers. And what I put down was I was going to India because to see an old friend of my family who had been ill, and this might be my last chance to see him. All of which was true on one level. So I asked her, I said, now how long is the visa going to take? She said, 3 days. And I said, but I'm leaving tomorrow night. She said, oh, well, in that case, we'll just have to help you, won't we? So you come back tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock and I have it for you. So the next Thursday morning, with that flight leaving at 8 o'clock that night, Liz took me into the city, dragged me all over the place. We got the visa. Picked up something from Fred and Ella that was to go to Baba that Baba had asked for. Went running back home, packed, took off to the airport. Still called Idlewild then, now Kennedy. When the plane took off, my last memory of Liz and Jenny was seeing them on the observation platform in the pouring rain, jumping up and down and hugging each other. Right? Were you there? You were. No, but I saw you all up there. Unlike now, the plane had 8 people on it, and I was the only one who got in New York, on in New York, and went all the way to Bombay. When I got off the flight early in the morning, there was a young man from Air India at the bottom of the steps and a customs officer. Baba had received my cable an hour before I landed in India. It had been delayed. They had stopped other people from the West from coming. They had cabled them and told them not to come. My cable got hung up in Bombay, Adi told me later, and they didn't get it. So Mani had telegraphed Air India and asked them to meet me and to tell me to go to the Napier Hotel in Pune and to call her at Guru Prasad the moment I got in. Well, the young man from Air India took me to breakfast. He gave me a quick lesson in the Indian money, which was then still a very complicated thing. I didn't hear a word he said. He drove me out to the Dadar railroad station, got the station master. I sat in his office till the train came. The station master put me on the train for Pune, found somebody who spoke English who could tell me when to get off. Because all the signs were in Hindi script. I got into Pune, and the only thing I had to do for myself the whole trip was to get a cab from the railroad station to the Napier Hotel. And I did that. I walked into the hotel, walked up to the desk and said, I need a telephone, because I remembered Mani's instructions. And instead of handing me the phone, the man at the desk picked up the phone, dialed a number, and he listened, and he handed me the telephone. And I had Erich at Guru Prasad. And Erich said that Baba had said I was to stay at the hotel and rest until between 3 and 3:30, and one of them would come for me. I don't know what I did in those few hours. I don't remember it at all. But at 3 o'clock, Maharji came. And he drove me out to Guru Prasad. And the car pulled up in front of the steps. And I got out of the car, stooping over. And when I stood up, the front doors were open to that big hall in the center. And there was Baba sitting at the back of that hall. And I could see his eyes from that distance, which must have been about 75 feet. And then all of a sudden, all I could see were his eyes. Like they filled that room. And there were shafts of light coming from behind his eyes. And I thought, if he drops his eyes, I'll drown in that light. And it was back to normal. You know, it was Baba sitting there. And I went running up the steps past Maharji. And when I stepped into the hall, I felt again this same wave of love that I had felt here at Myrtle Beach, only so much stronger that it stopped me in my tracks, and my knees started shaking. And Baba looked at me and smiled, and he held out his arms like this, saying, come on. And I went running into his arms, burst into tears. And it was the first time in my life that I felt that I had a home. And I had never felt so completely safe, completely loved, and completely protected in my life. And I had always thought that being a middle child, I had brought myself up. I had done everything on my own, and at that moment realized that it had always been him. You know, that he was mother, father, he was everything. And there was nothing else to look for. You know, I had just found it all. When I stepped back from Baba's embrace, I was stunned to see that he was crying. And I stood there and looked at him, and he sat there and looked at me. He just nodded. And then he said, "Do you have any questions?" "No, Baba." And because I always figured if there's anything that Baba wanted me to know, he'd tell me. And I wouldn't have to ask. And someone had also warned me, if you ask Baba a question, you may get an answer you don't really want, so it's best not to ask. Right? Well, then he called Mara and Mani. Gohar was in the room. So was Erich. And Mara and Mani and some of the other women were in Mara's room, which had a louvered door, shutters, which you could, you know, raise or lower. And they were in there, and they had watched my meeting with Baba. And Baba called them to introduce them and some of the other Mandali. I have lost a lot of what was said in that next half hour, 45 minutes, because I was so stunned at the time. I don't remember it at all, except generally that Baba asked the questions you usually ask to people. Did you sleep well? How was the trip? Are you eating all right? You know, do you feel all right? That sort of thing. When then finally he asked me to sit at his feet, and he said, "Did you read the family letter?" And I thought, he's going to throw me out. I shouldn't have come. I didn't care, you know. All I had wanted was once to see Baba's eyes, and I had that, and I could have gone home then. I would have been perfectly happy. But I said, "Yes, Baba, I'd read it." And he said, "Well, what did it say?" And I said, "Well, he said people shouldn't come a great distance or a great expense." And he said, "You came anyway?" I said, "Yes, Baba." And he said, "It's all right. I'm glad you came in spite of the letter." And they said, "Now, what are you going to do when you leave here this afternoon?" And I said, "Well, Baba, I was planning to go back on the 1 a.m. Air India flight tonight, but they tell me I can't make it. There's no way to get back to Bombay in time. But I'll try if you want me to." He said, "No, no, you can't make it." And he said, "Well, so what will you do? There isn't another flight for 5 days." And he said, "No sightseeing." I said, "No, Baba." And I said, "Well, I guess I'll just sit in a hotel and wait for the plane." He said, "No, you'll come here every day for 5 days and sit with me until the plane goes." And then he said, "What will your office think of that?" And I said, "Well, Baba, they said it would be fine if I stayed, just to let them know." And he said, "Well, make sure you do." Then he asked, somewhere in there, some of these things he asked when I was in there more or less alone with them, and some of them after the crowd had come in for that afternoon, which amounted to 3,000 people. But he asked me if I knew why Saint Mira, let me see, if I knew the story of Mira, which I didn't. She had been a Hindu saint, a woman who had been a princess, who had given up her family, her husband, everything, to spend her life wandering, telling people about her Lord Krishna, although she had lived several hundred years after Krishna. And it was the only time during the 5 days that Baba got serious. And he looked at me and he said, "Mira was not concerned about offending her husband. Her only concern was about offending her Lord. And she never put anyone or anything between herself and Krishna." And he repeated it. And I got the point. And I realized he wasn't saying, "You don't love." But what he was saying was, never get so attached to something or someone that would take you from me. The whole rest of the time was very light, very funny, a lot of laughter. That same afternoon, he also asked me if I knew why St. Francis had loved Jesus more than Peter did. And he said it was because Francis never met Jesus, that his longing and his love was that much greater. And of course, that meant a great deal to me at that point, having waited all those years to see Baba and having felt so cheated and left out. Then he asked me if I'd read any of his books. And I told him that I had read The Discourses and God to Man and Avatar. There weren't that many books around then. And then he said, did you read God Speaks? I got very embarrassed, you know, but I told him the truth. I said, well, Baba, I tried, and I got to page 64, and I didn't understand a word of it. And he laughed, and he said, never mind, forget it, it's not important. Yeah. Well, he knew a dummy when he saw one. And he let me off the hook, you know. And I have tried a couple of times since, and it still doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't feel the obligation to read it. Unlike some other people whom Baba told, read it. He told Ed Luck, read it 7 times and understand it. He knew that was too much to expect of me. So, well, the afternoon went on. I was sitting there at Baba's feet, like Dana is, and it became obvious to Baba and to everybody else and to me that I was extremely uncomfortable. I was not used to sitting like that. And Baba said, you're not born to that. Like we are. So he had somebody bring a chair and put it against the wall, and he asked Rano to come out and sit with me to interpret while I was there. So my view of Baba was like three-quarter of his face. If he was sitting where Corinne is, I would have been where Bob is, Bob Eaton. So that I was looking across like that. Well, Liz had told me the only important thing to remember when you're with Baba is never take your eyes off him, because the moment you do, he's going to turn and look at you and you're going to miss it. And it happened to her. So I sat there with Rano and I just stared at him the whole afternoon. And every once in a while, he'd whip around. He was so fast. He'd whip around, he'd look at me and he'd go, are you happy? You know, and Rana would give me the elbow and the ribs. She'd say, answer him. And it was repeated over and over and over. And that was the only thing he ever asked me. Right straight through the next time I saw him, the first time he saw me, he said, are you happy? And it began to dawn on me, he meant that. I want you to be happy. You know, it's important. When that first day ended, I was so exhausted. Like, being with Baba was such a... His vitality was, I found, so draining. Then I went back to the hotel, went to bed without dinner, fell asleep. The next morning, when I woke up, I found Mayor G at my door, ready to take me off on a tour of Pune. And not being very bright at the time, I didn't realize he wouldn't have been there unless Baba had sent him. And I turned him down. I said I was too tired to go and I wanted to be rested to see Bob in the afternoon. I thought Mayor G looked awfully upset. He had to go back and tell Bob I refused to go with him. You know, but Baba said, it's all right, Mayor G, she was right. We'll do it another day. You know, but you know, how dumb. So about 12:30 that afternoon, I heard this commotion downstairs. I was staying at the Knapp Pier on the second floor, which had a balcony all around the building, and I heard this pounding up the stairs, and there was Fred Winterfeld. He had arrived. And we grabbed each other and did this jig around the balcony. Fred was so happy for me and so happy for himself, of course, to be there. That afternoon, Fred got to see Baba alone for a little while. Now, Baba had not asked me how I'd gotten to India. I hadn't mentioned it. But he asked Fred, he said, how did Ann get here? So Fred told him. And when he got to the part about the girls giving me the money, Baba had tears in his eyes. And he said, Baba is touched by such love for Baba and for a friend. So when I saw Baba that afternoon, he said, Fred had told him the story. And he said, all helped you then. And I said, yes, Baba. He said, all helped you because I helped you. I wanted you to come. Which by that time was obvious. I never would have made it unless he meant that to be. And then he told me, he said, I have sent a cable to Virginia and Liz. And he had Erich give me a copy of it. Well, what he'd done, I mean, that morning I had tried to cable them and I couldn't find the words. It was terrible cable. He had sent them a cable and signed my name to it. And what it said was, Baba says, because you have helped me come to Baba, you have made Baba come closer to you. Baba sends his love to you both. And signed it, Love, Ann. Baba turned to me and he said, do you think they'll like it? Well, then Baba told Fred that he wanted us to go back to New York on the same plane. Therefore, Fred would also stay until that flight went. That Air India flight was going back to New York the day after the darshan, the whole two-week darshan ended. So we would both be there right till the end. That afternoon, Fred and I were sitting against the wall during the darshan, and the long line of Indians were coming up to Baba for prasad and darshan, and I heard Arnavas at the back of the room call out, Harry? And there was Harry Kenmore. He had come without notifying anybody. He got himself out to Guru Prasad. Harry was blind. Got in line, and halfway up the hall, Arnavas spotted him in the line, and Baba said, Harry, what are you doing here? And Harry said, I've come to see my beloved Pop. And Baba said, well, your beloved Pop is very happy to see his dear son. So then there were three of us sitting against the wall, and Baba had Maharji change Harry's tickets and say that we were to go back to New York, all three of us back to New York together. In the mornings, Baba would meet at Guru Prasad with the men Mandali and any male visitors, as he did wherever he was. And on those first couple of mornings, he sent me off with Arnavas to visit Erich's family or some of the other women who were in Pune, while Fred and Harry went out to Guru Prasad to join the men. On the last morning, Baba sent word that I was to come with them out to Guru Prasad. So all three of us went into Mandali Hall, and Baba said to me, now you're not supposed to be here. There are no women allowed in here. It's a meeting exclusively for the men, so you can only stay 5 minutes. You sit down. So I sat down, and Harry was telling jokes to Baba. And at one point, Baba stopped and said, Harry, are you sure you want to tell that joke? Ann is here. And Harry said to him, she's over 21, Baba. And Baba said, all right. It was one of Harry's innocuous jokes. Anyway, after a few minutes, Baba turned to me and he said, now you have to go. You're not supposed to be here. You go to the women, go to Mara. So I got up and I started out. He said, come back for another 5 minutes. So I came back and I sat down. A few minutes later, he said, now you really have to go. And I got up and I started out again. He stopped me again. And he said, when I come back in 700 years, you make sure that you come back as a man so you can attend these exclusive meetings. And I laugh, and Bob is laughing, everybody's laughing. I'm out the door, and I thought, I really don't know much about how he works. And Later on in the day, I found Francis Brabazon, and I said, Francis, was Baba kidding? And if he wasn't, how do I make sure? And Francis said, Baba will often tell you something in a light manner. I said, but what he's done is he's made you a promise, and all you have to do is remember it. Just don't forget it. Right. Well, then I went, right after leaving Baba, Anubis took me to Mara's room, and there were, must have been 20 women in there. Everybody talking at once. I was very confused, and I was completely out of it. Anyway, my method of getting through that week in some kind of functional state was just to do whatever anybody asked me to do. Right. So I didn't have to think about it. And Mara said they had a sari they wanted me to try on. So they all got together and they got me dressed in this beautiful lavender sari. It's flecked with gold. And I had never had a sari on before, so I was a little bit worried that it was going to stay on. I still didn't know what was happening, but Gohar kept saying to me, now put your hands together and say, Namaste, Baba. And she made me say it over and over until I got the pronunciation somewhat clear. I still didn't know what was happening. So then they got me dressed. We trooped out of Mara's room into the big hall, across the hall, opened another door. Gohar gave me a shove in the back and slammed the door behind me, and I was back in Mandali Hall with Baba and these 75 guys who just arrived from Hamapur. And my only thought was, this is not going to stay on. But I remembered what Gohar had said, and I looked at Baba, and I said, Namaste, Baba. And his eyes went like this. And he said, it's beautiful. He called me over, and he embraced me, and he said, now you go back to Mara. And when I got back to Mara, she said that the sari was hers, and that Baba had said that she could give it to me as a gift from her and from Baba. Well, what no one knew was that that morning, having obviously fallen head over heels in love that week, I wanted very much to get dressed up for Baba on that last day. The only thing I had with me, which was appropriate for summer in New York, but not in India, was a black cotton dress. And I couldn't get within 10 feet of it. The heat was so intense, right? So I was wearing the same thing that I had worn all week and washed out every night. Baba provided. He gave me every little thing I wanted that week. Every stupid little thing that nobody else would have thought about. Well, that afternoon when we were sitting with Baba again in the hall, and he had said that everyone who was still in Pune must come to Guru Prasad that afternoon and receive Prasad, even though they'd already had it, and that was an order. And Anubis told me Baba had never done anything like that before. A lot of the Indians had stayed around on the chance that Baba would do just that and they'd get another chance. So there were something like 5,000 people trying to get in that hall. At the last minute arrived Edward and Irwin Luck for the last hour on the last day. Baba let them sit at his feet and hold this rose pillow over his feet because one of the orders for the darshan was Baba did not want anyone to bow down to him or to touch his feet, so they were to hold the pillow over it. And then Harry and Fred and I were sitting against the wall, and at some point Baba decided he was going to introduce all of us to the Indians, who obviously were very curious about who these people were. So Baba said, this is Fred Winnefelt from New York, Harry Kenmore from New York, and Ann Conlon from the United States, although I was also from New York. And he said, she is a blessed woman. Otherwise, why would she have come when she had never seen me? Her love brought her, and that love is my gift to her. And he confirmed for me what I had felt here in Myrtle Beach, that the gift of his love was all I had to give back to him. he had also, he told the Indians that all of us coming so far for such a short time, not knowing if we were going to get anything, we did get there, that touched him very much, and that it was a test of the daring of the lover to come so far when you didn't know if there was anything, that you were going to get anything out of it. But as Harry told him again, he said, you know, Bob, it's no distance for us, and it's no cost, and that he felt that some of those people who had walked 1,000 miles to get there for that hour, that they were the ones who had the daring. You know, it's very true. I mean, it was nothing for us. Later that night, when that last day was over, I think it lasted, it was supposed to last an hour, it went on until at least 10 o'clock at night. And Baba saw everybody who came individually give prasad. He told the five of us that we were to come the next morning before Meherji took us to Bombay to catch a flight that night to say goodbye to him. And that night at my hotel, Gohir came to see me. I had been wishing that because Mara had given me that sari, there was something I could give to her. But the order from Baba had been in that family letter also, no one is to bring any gifts to the Mandali. So I didn't even mention it. But Gohir came and said that